Welcome to the Bridging Success Podcast. I'm Bo Jenkins, founder and CEO of BridgeNet Technology Consultants, where we solve challenging technology issues for growing businesses. We are the leading customer-focused, community-involved expert technology consultants. Welcome to Bridging Success, the podcast where top B2B CEOs and executives share their insights, challenges, and game-changing strategies that drive information and business growth. I'm your host, Bo Jenkins, CEO and founder of BridgeNet Technology Consultants. Each episode, we spotlight visionary leaders shaping the future, diving into critical decisions, leadership philosophies, and breakthrough moments that have propelled them to success. On this episode, we're joined by Young Han. Young is a business coach and fractional CFO, COO leader who helps founders and owners turn their ideas into actions. Young, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Bo. I really appreciate it.
Great. Looking forward to our talk today. Young, you've built and scaled several businesses. My research told me you started at 19. Tell us about that journey and how it led you to start Thesis today.
Yeah, I appreciate your research for me. That's wonderful. Yeah, so actually it was 18. The moment I became an adult and I could actually legally apply for a business license, I started a restaurant. And it was just pure dumb luck that I started it and just pure gumption that it came to fruition and was a success. Yeah, me and my friend were just talking as you do in college, and we were just joking around about how awesome it'd be to own a bar or a restaurant. And then that kind of just escalated over the course of the night into let's actually do something about it instead of talking about it. And we woke up at 10 o'clock the next day and we're like, hey, we should do that. And we egged each other into it. And so we decided to go start the process of building a restaurant. And that was the first business I ever did. And very fortunate for me, it did really well. And it was an incredible success. And we were able to generate $3 million in annual revenue in our first year of business. And we proceeded to do that for a couple of years before it enveloped our life and it took over our ability to scale it further or even operationalize it. We're young and dumb and inexperienced. And we decided to sell it, and I was able to exit my first business. And that was my first foray into entrepreneurship. And I immediately thought I was the world's greatest entrepreneur, and then quickly realized I was very lucky because I proceeded to fail 5 businesses thereafter and quickly realized how fortunate and lucky I was to have such a successful first business.
That's great. That's great. So many founders feel trapped by needing to be involved in every detail of their business. What are some of those lessons that you've learned, and how do you guide entrepreneurs in developing systems and SOPs today that give them freedom to step back without sacrificing quality or growth?
Yeah, it stems back to my entrepreneurship experience, right? I've had the ability and opportunity to work at some really cool companies. I've worked for very established brands like Starbucks and Apple, and got to experience like what it is to build people systems and processes at a very world-class level. And just understanding how you can basically make money working through anybody, really. You could basically, a Starbucks is run by typically 22-year-olds. Those are your average employee ages. And it's fascinating because they make so much money, right? The average Starbucks does $1.2 million a year. And you have these youngsters that don't have any experience managing these amazingly lucrative stores because of these really great systems. And so I was very fortunate to be able to work at some really established brands that have world-class SOPs and got to see the power of what that does in scaling operations very quickly. And then I got to experience working at venture-backed startups. So I worked at a lot of startups when I was in Silicon Valley, and I lived in the San Francisco area. And very fortunate that I got to be a part of that ecosystem. And once you start getting a lot of capital to make large bets to scale very quickly, you get the opportunity to experience what it looks like to try a lot of things. And so I was very fortunate to learn how systems scale through people very quickly. And I was able to hire at Phil's Coffee. We grew to 1,000 employees in 1 year and got to see what that looked like to scale that quickly in human capital and what that did to the masses, and just a lot of unique experiences. So very early on in my professional career, I got to experience a lot of people scale systems and how powerful it was to scale. And so now that I'm pushing towards 50, I feel like I'm a little wiser and smarter, and I'm like shedding the venture-backed companies as much as I can and moving more towards boring trades businesses and service businesses. And that's really where I'm angling towards. And I still help a lot of venture-backed companies through my fractional CFO work, but I really am pushing more towards service and trades. And so much so that I've started a bunch of trades businesses. I started a pool cleaning company here 3 years ago in my local town. And I'm just implementing all these systems to help me scale it faster. And so to answer your question directly, it's so incredibly valuable because people will say, why is it so important to build a system? And it's, I don't know how else to say it other than look at my pool cleaning company. It'll do $4 million. It's fourth year of business. And I work on it like 2 or 3 hours a week. And it's almost impossible to do that unless you have really good operating systems that people can easily follow, KPIs that are leading and lagging that you can measure against, and really help people quantify and qualify what good work looks like so that way they can be successful for you and you can scale through time leverage. So the potential and possibility is there if you can really learn how to build good systems.
That makes perfect sense. Let's dive a little bit into the technology behind those systems.
Sure.
You mentioned leveraging technology to streamline operations and enhance clarity. Can you give a few specific examples of how you've successfully integrated tools maybe into the pool cleaning business or other people that you've helped to simplify those processes and boost team performance?
Yeah, I may have misspoke a little bit. I meant that I was in technology and I did operations and finance for technology companies. But yeah, I love building in technologies into the pool cleaning industry. There's a lot of things that we do here that are not very complicated in my point of view, but they're really amazing in the service industry. And like simple thing is text automation. This is not like sophisticated technology, but it's incredibly powerful. And like the customers are like, wow, they even text me before they come and they show me a picture of my tech and they send me a picture afterwards and they feel so personalized. And it's like a lot of that's automated. And it's not really someone sitting there like messaging Bo saying it's all done through these automations, but it gives this personal touch. And I think that there's a lot of ways to get your head above the masses, be head and shoulders above people just by including these technologies that are very low cost and very easy to implement to your service business.
I love that automation, personalization through automation. That's
Yeah, we're also exploring right now some AI tools for the weekend. I personally like having people answer the phones because there is something to be said about the locals liking local businesses. And I live in small town Texas, so it's even more pronounced here than I think even when I was in California. And they really like to know that there's a local person. And you can tell up until this point, you can still tell it's a human being versus an AI. But
then
over the weekend and stuff, I'm exploring turning on the AI bot for the weekend so they can answer the phone, book appointments, answer common knowledge questions that we can load into a database and provide that service that we're not even able to provide during the weekends because we don't have staff on call. So those are things we're exploring. And then we're also exploring a lot of machine automations, right? So ways to monitor the pool chemistry and stuff so we can maximize our efficacy, but also our capacity to service pools. A lot of really cool ways to bring in technology that I think a lot of our competitors are not considering, which gives me some advantages for sure.
Yeah, that's neat. I've seen some really mind-blowing examples of AI voice assistants that they're getting so close to not being able to distinguish between whether you're talking to a human or not. It's a
Yeah,
little bit
there's
scary,
this
but a
one
little bit
company.
exciting.
Yeah, there's this one company I do CFO work for, and they're developing, and I don't know how much I can share because they're still in stealth mode, but they're building a virtual avatar that looks like you, sounds like you, talks like you. And then they're hyper targeting people that have written books or have a lot of content out in the internet. So they could basically download that to create like enneagrams around you and give you personality and nuance. And it's really fascinating. It's almost scary because now it can like, you can train the AI to see through the camera and understand if like they're mad or they're sad. So my avatar like picks up the emotions that I'm talking to it. Like it knows when I'm angry with it or I'm frustrated with it. And it knows to build relationships and rapport and make comments about things in my background. It's scary. And I had it talking to my kid. I got the version 2 prototype and I was having it talk to my kid and I could not tell the difference. It literally was like me and my kid was having a ball talking to me. It was amazing. Yeah, the technology is moving incredibly fast.
So let's shift a little bit and talk a little bit about balancing roles as founders, as mentors, as executives, as parents even. It's
Yes.
a common challenge amongst guys like you and me. How have you managed your priorities, and what advice would you have to author other entrepreneurs who want to succeed professionally without losing sight of their personal and family goals?
I almost feel like this question is preloaded, but it's totally not because I just did a LinkedIn post about this yesterday. It was like I literally posted on LinkedIn yesterday. What did I say? And it's doing really well, getting a lot of engagement. It's super funny because I said, being a parent is living life on hard mode. And I was basically saying my wife took the kids to Montana for like a trip with her girlfriends. And so I was home alone and for 5 or 6 days. And it was unbelievable. I ate three meals, like sitting down. I woke up every day. I went hiking. I worked out every day. I journaled. I slept 7 hours. I worked 10 hours. It was unbelievable. I felt like just like completely unlocked. And I'm like, I could not believe how busy I thought I was pre-kids because I got so much done without my kids for 5 days, and it was so productive. And then obviously the post was more around, I can't wait for my kids to come back, and I'm super glad they're back. And I literally just got out of the pool with them. I had to stop to go do this podcast real quick, but I took an hour break to go swimming with them and then hop on this podcast real quick, because for me it's all about, you have 24 hours in a day, and it's like, how do you want to carve those times out? And I try to time box everything. And so people think I'm a little crazy, but I track every hour that I live. And at the end of every month, I look at how many hours I spent where, and then I look at the results in my life, and then I basically make adjustments in the hours that I'm spending. And then I just leading lagging indicator force function it into the life that I want and the results that I want. And so if I'm not making as enough money, then I'll sacrifice a little bit of health, or maybe I'll sacrifice a little bit of time with my wife, and I'll increase my sales outbound motions or whatever that may be. And if I'm making enough money and I want to spend more time with my kids and my health, then I just play with these numbers and these dials, and I optimize and operationalize my time. And I think about it as inputs and outputs and allocation of ins and outs of hours.
KPIs for life.
That's right. It's weird. I'm not gonna lie. A lot of people tell me it's too much. Just live your life and be relaxed. But this is me natural. And so, like they say, what is it like? Like Kaizen is like when you figure out what you're good at, what the world will pay you for. I can't remember the other two things, but I can't help it. I would do this anyways. Like I enjoy operationalizing things, and so it's not work for me. So people think it's so stressful that I do this, but I'm like, no, it's actually relaxing for me. It makes me feel good to know how I'm manufacturing my hours in my day. So,
Yeah, I read somewhere the term you used, work-life integration instead of work-life balance. I love that you just got out of the pool with the kids and then hopped on the podcast. That's a good, you can't paint a better example of integrating your work and your life together with
yeah, I've just started to realize this over the last 4 or 5 years. I've like really switched from trying to find work-life balance and finding that time to unwind and protect. And it's just like nonsensical, because but for me, logically speaking, like if I have a bad business day, like I can't help but have that hanging over my head in my personal life. And if I have a bad argument with my wife, I can't help it going into my work day a little bit. It's like we're human beings, we're not robots. And so the moment I started realizing that I'm not going to be 100% binary, like I just stopped trying to make it so perfect and just started thinking about life as work-life integration. And I started bringing my kids to conferences and stuff. It's super funny. Like I took them to a conference last year, and I was meeting with some private equity folks, and they were looking at me going, because my kid's just there. I'm like on an iPad, like doing little drawing things. And they're like, you could do that? And I'm like, do you care? And they're like, no, I don't care at all. I'm totally bringing my kid too. And I was like, nobody cares. It's like you go to these conferences, you're working for, I don't know, 6 hours, maybe 4 hours a day. The rest of it's you're alone, you're eating bad food, traveling by yourself, you know, to be like staying at crappy hotels. It's not like you're doing 20 hours of work when you go to these conferences anyways. Now I have 4 hours of work, she's on her iPad, and then the rest of the 20 hours I'm hanging out with my daughter in these cool places. It's like,
awesome.
yeah. So I started bringing those things in, and it's been really fun for me to like integrate work and life. And I think it's possible because I'm a business owner. I totally understand the luxury behind that I'm the boss, so who's going to say no to me? But I do think that if you are a business owner and you are a leader, you have the ability to integrate. You should totally integrate it, because life isn't binary, in my opinion, and I'm very opinionated about that.
Yeah, some of those skills are really empowering to employees too, when you give them the ability to not just set an example, do what I do, but this is why I do what I do. And you empower your employees to do that same thing. They might think it's weird at first, but once they experience it, they'll truly value what you're giving them as an employer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it comes with the different types of roles that you do too, right? Like I have a consulting business, but I also have a coaching business. I have a video production company. I have a bunch of businesses, but I don't know how much you research me, but I own 13 businesses. And sometimes I have people that are like in my cleaning company, they're like, I want to work remote. And I'm like, no, like we're a cleaning company. You don't get to work remote at a cleaning company. Just pick a different company to work at. There's a million ways that you can work remote. Like, why are you trying to make a remote job into a job that's, it's just so weird to me how people think about work and life. It's just go find another job or start a company or go find a place that you can go do that. Like, it's just so strange that you're trying to make all these things work in this one company, and it's like the exact opposite of what that company provides.
Maybe one day soon you'll be able to say yes to that person because they'll be able to control the robot that
Yeah.
remotely.
Yeah, that's funny. I
So,
hope it doesn't get automated too soon, because I do want to make a little more money out of it before it gets disrupted and demolished here.
Speaking of that, are there any particular trends or innovations that in your space that you find particularly interesting or inspiring that you want to explore more that just keep you awake at night with the next new idea?
Yeah, I think for me, the power of these AI tools is really fascinating, especially as it comes to financial services and financial modeling specifically. Financial modeling is not a binary. You can build a model is a model. Like, what sets a good model apart from like someone like a CPA making one is that it's not as just technical, like rote. You need to be able to tell story. You need to be able to like communicate a vision, and there's like an art to it. And these AI models are actually getting really close to copying the art. And I'm like, oh wow, this is really incredible. So I look at my junior staff and I'm like, why am I paying you over 6 figures a year? This thing is doing what you would take 30 hours, and it's doing it in 45 minutes, and it's better than what you can do. And like I was playing around with Perplexity. ChatGPT is not that great at building models, but Perplexity is pretty darn good. And I'm like very impressed with its output. And I lose sleep at night going, man, it's scary to think about like these roles getting disrupted, because if there's no junior staff to learn through osmosis from people like me on how to build models and how to tell these stories through business scale, like that institutional knowledge goes into the AI, and then we just have to rely on that to be truthful. Or it's a little bit weird because there's going to be a huge gap in our labor force in the next 10 or 15 years, not just in modeling, but like any kind of complex white collar work. It's going to be weird because there's going to be a massive gap of training and institutional knowledge that's being passed down, and there's going to be a huge reliance on these machine learning tools to execute on those things. And eventually people like me are going to die, and so we can't even be there to double check the work. Like right now it's like an amazing economy for me because everyone's hiring me to double check the AI, right? Everyone's like, hey, we did all this stuff, but now can you just double check the work? And so that's good for me, but I'm not going to live forever. I'm pushing 50, and I'm not the healthiest person, so I can't imagine living past 100. And this knowledge is going to die, and there's no junior staff learning the next to take over. They're not learning, because I can see in the next 5 years a lot of this stuff will be done through AI and automation. That keeps me up at night.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I've seen some pretty powerful stuff coming from some AI groups that I'm a member of, trying to follow it and stay up with what it's doing. And
Yeah, it's going
especially,
fast, right?
yeah, man, it can code websites in 30 seconds. It'll blow your mind. If you think of an idea and you can speak that idea,
Right.
chances are AI can code it for you.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Yeah, it's so unbelievably fast. And I try not to linger on it too much because it does unnerve me and makes me want to double down on these service businesses, because I feel like if I can start a lawn care business, an HVAC business, I'll be insulated for at least 5 or 10 more years, because I think the robots won't come to mass market for at least 5 or 6 more years. But
If there's anything that we can hold on to, radio was supposed to be dead in the 80s with tapes and CDs, and
yeah.
then MP3s was going to kill the radio, but
Yeah.
radio still survives. So there's hope there.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think there's going to be a resurgence, right? There's going to be like a ping pong of like pendulum swings where it'll swing back, and human made will be highly valued over time, right? Where it's like the imperfections is what people want.
Good
Yeah.
homemade cooking is always nice to come back home to,
That's
right?
right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's what kind of keeps me up at night. What keeps you up at night?
Oh man, hackers, IT security,
Oh, wow. Yeah.
but still fighting the good fight over here with my clients, protecting them and making sure that they know they see the dangers that we see still. And
Security is so scary. It's so scary because we're getting so much more digitized too at a much faster rate than we ever have. And it's just all there, and it's so fragile. I don't think people even realize how fragile it is.
AI didn't help any of that because you don't know where that data is going. When you put it in the model, what's that model doing with your data? You know,
Yeah, that's a good
it
point.
introduces a whole nother concept of security for us. So,
That's a really good point. Yeah, now you got me freaking out. I love it.
let's talk about some areas you're focusing on to continue to grow and improve, either
Yeah.
in your business, your personal life. What are you doing to stay on top of things?
Yeah, so I'm hyper leveraging both for myself and for my kids, actually. Funny enough, I've been thinking a lot about this, but I think that the future is going to be really around relationships. And I think technical skills will start to get commoditized over the next 10 years. And I think that what's going to really matter is your ability to understand that technical skill or that technical industry or space, and how you build relationships is really going to come to the fore. And that's my bet, and that's what I've been honing and working on. So I've been over the last 2 years hyper focusing on my ability to create content and be a content machine. And so I have a podcast, I've been posting on LinkedIn every day. I have a newsletter now, and I've just been pumping out a lot of content and growing my influence, I guess you should say, and my relationship with more people. I'm making a hard bet that's going to be the skill that matters a lot in the future. And then as it relates to my kids, I stopped saving for their college and just started really investing in their social and critical skills, like their ability to think critically and their ability to make relationships, and really focusing on like teaching them like manners and how to push back, stand up for yourself, but also be kind and be thoughtful, teaching them power dynamics and walking them through those things when I get the opportunity to show them, and really hyper focusing on relationship skills, because I think that's going to be the future, likability and confidence.
It's not going to come from a screen, that's for sure.
That's what I think, man. Yeah. And I think that a lot of our technical skills are going to get commoditized pretty quickly. And unless you're in like the top one percentile of that skill, I don't think it's going to matter quite as much as just being a good person, good human being, and being likable and being trustworthy and building really good relationships.
Yeah, you talked about podcasting and newsletters, posting on LinkedIn every day. You really love the art of the story. What's your favorite story? What are you doing when it comes to storytelling and practicing that art?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if I have like a template or a shtick yet. All I do know is that for me, it's just being as authentic as I can. And that seems to work for me. I don't have a huge following. I'm growing my follower base pretty well, in my opinion. But I do have people that understand me and believe me and like me. So that whole concept of having 1,000 people that you trust and know versus having 1 million followers that don't know you. I just be my authentic self. And what really helps me do that is I just record videos. So I just take walks. And I use ChatGPT and I have it prompt me questions that could be interesting for me to answer. And then I say the question on the video and then I just freeform answer it in 2 minutes. And then I just post it. I don't edit it. I don't do anything. I just post it. And
Cool.
I don't spend too much time thinking about it. And then people see me for my authentic self. And it's a very fast way to lose people, I will tell you right now. So if you don't have a thick skin, don't do this, because people have a lot of opinions on the internet and they will tell you that you're an idiot very quickly. And the benefit of it is that they move away very fast. So you'll shirk the non-believers and people that think you're dumb very quickly. And then you'll attract the people that are attracted to your thought process and mindset very quickly. And that's the one benefit. But by doing that, it's been helping me exercise my storytelling skills just by practicing.
Yeah, I love that idea. That's but comes with that warning, right? Caveat, not for all people. So
Internet's a painful place. People are just naturally, the vast majority of, there's just so many trolls. Let's just say it that way. That's an easier way to explain it. There's so many people that are angry and upset out there.
even more so on the internet.
Exactly.
What's one key piece of advice you would offer listeners who are trying to scale their business with intentionality rather than just hustle?
Yeah, I think that one piece of advice is really think about your business not necessarily in technical terms. A lot of us get so subscribed to this, okay, I did 3 million last year. I want to do 4 million this year. And so I need to make these incremental changes and do these 10% increases in this and then optimize that, lower my COGS here. It's a really hard pill to swallow, but the best piece of advice that I got that I like to give now is like when you're at that stage and you're trying to propel it, you got to rethink it backwards. So let's say I'm a $5 million business. What do I have to change about myself to be a $5 million business? Because doing these incremental things, sure, you can get there and it could take you 5 years, 10 years, 20 years to get there with these 10% incremental changes. But you have the power to jump and leapfrog if you want to, just by really thinking through, hey, if I'm a $10 million business, what about this organization has to change and what do I have to change into? And you could literally reverse engineer that and adapt it and make these massive changes in your business. And so that's been a huge, huge wake-up call for me and a great piece of advice that was given to me 5 years ago before I started on my journey of business building. And it's just been incredible for me. It's been really incredible. It's very hard. It's very hard. I'm not going to lie, especially at 45 years old. It's not easy to change yourself. But if you think like that and you keep surrounding yourself with people that think like that, you will be able to start scaling your net worth very quickly and scaling your businesses much more quickly, because people that play in the time leverage space are thinking like that. They're not thinking about incremental growth. They're thinking about, what do I have to do to be $100 million? What do I have to do to me? They think bigger and then they make these big kind of decisions and macro changes to make movements. And it's really fascinating.
Time is the one steady constant that we all hold equal, right? Nobody else has more than 24 hours in the day.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so how you allocate that is really precious. And then the only other piece of advice that I can say for people that are trying to scale is keep it simple. We always try to lean towards overcomplicating things, but there's a lot of money to be made just by keeping things simple. And I will tell you, simple does scale. And what I mean by that is try not to do more than 3 to 5 major priorities at a time in your company. And even if you get to 1,000 employees, if every single person can't point to what they're doing, how it impacts the 3 to 5 goals in the company, they're probably working on the wrong things and you're not really being efficient or scaling. And I think that level of like specificity and focus is really key by keeping it simple. Salesforce does this really good, by the way. They force rank their values, they force rank their priorities, and you should be able to map everything that you're doing all the way to the top 5 goals in the company. And there's something to be said about that level of simplicity, and you don't have to make things more complex.
Yeah, asking ChatGPT to prompt you and then just taking a walk and recording it, right?
Yeah, what I do now is actually have full-on conversations with ChatGPT on Walk. So I'll put it in voice mode and I'll say, ask me questions one by one until you have a comprehensive understanding of what I'm trying to solve for, and then solve for it. And then it'll ask me questions for 45 minutes and I'll have like full-on conversations on walks with it. And it'll just keep asking me questions until I give it enough information for it to come up with the best answer it possibly can. It's amazing.
But do you ever ask it to pretend to be somebody when you do that? Pretend you're Albert Einstein and ask me questions?
I have not done that. I do tell it to be a very good business coach or an executive strategist or something like that, but I've never actually given it a persona to identify with. That's really interesting. I
Yeah.
should do that.
Try that one time. It'll try it with something that you've already done, even so
Yeah.
even more, and see the differences in it. It's pretty neat.
That is pretty neat. Yeah. What's been really tickling my curiosity recently is asking it questions about myself. That's been really fun. Hey, what are some of the deep insecurities, fears that I have based on what you know about me? And what are some of the pros and strengths of my dad skills and versus my executive skill? It's just super fun. The most recent one I did was what's my spirit animal and why? And it was so funny. Yeah, it's just there's just some really insightful information that comes out of that thing. Yeah.
Yeah, take it all with a grain of salt, though, still. Yeah.
Totally, totally. Yeah.
Look, Young, I appreciate our time together. For those that want to follow you on your journey, that want to take a walk with you and chat GPT, how do we learn more about your work? Where can they find you online?
Yeah, I would start with alwayshan.com. It's my last name, HAN, and then always Han. So it's a play on words like I'm always on. But alwayshan.com is my personal website, and it links out to all my various businesses and ways that you can work with me. But the two primary ways to work with me is either through my business coaching business, Owners Club, and that helps you get to $2 million. And then if you're already at the $2 million range and you're trying to scale, then fractional CFO services at Thesis. That's the two ways that most people work with me.
Great. I love it. Look, thanks for coming on today. I really enjoyed our time together. I'll catch you on Always Han and make some connections.
Thank you, Bo. This was great. I appreciate you having me on your show.
All right, Young. This is Bo. Thank you so much for listening to the Bridging Success Podcast. If you are a successful business owner who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.bridgenetllc.com to sign up. If something in this episode connected with you, would you mind sharing it on social media? Just take a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or share it on your favorite social media platform. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media with the hashtag BridgingSuccess and let them know about the show. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, and reviews, they go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, bridgenetllc.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. Find me on Facebook at /BJakins or on Instagram at BoJakins. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.